to Resettled Radio, brought to you by the ARCC, live on Planet FM.
Stay tuned for current affairs, conversation, interviews, music and more,
as we explore the perspectives and stories from resettled communities,
and bring you information from within the resettlement sector.
Candles burned out long before your legend ever will. Loveliness we've lost, those empty days without your smile, this torch we'll always carry for our nation's golden child. Even though we try, the truth brings us to tears. All our words cannot express the joy you've brought us through the years. And it seems to me you've lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will. May you ever grow in our hearts. You were the grace that placed us where lives were torn apart. Goodbye, this road from a country lost without your soul. We'll miss the wings of your compassion more than you will ever know. And it seems to me you've lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will.
Hello, kia ora, assalamu alaikum, abari, namaste, salam now, international greetings to you all. Welcome to Resettled Radio, brought to you by ARCC. Today, on this Saturday, on the May the 4th, 2019, I'm Galuak Shol, your host for this one-hour show. And I will be happy to share with you some news and music and and all the news feed, and we will be engaging. If you have any time to call back, call our studio. We will provide you a number to call. And, yep, and my colleague here, Yubi, has just arrived, so the studio will be a good one. So, yeah. Welcome to you all. It's a good weather today in Nairobi, in Auckland.
Yeah, and I'm totally like back after 4 weeks now, right? And remember today on the morning, I was like, you know, just driving in through the bridge, like, you know, bridge on the Pakuranga Highway.
Yeah.
And then it was so foggy.
How?
I don't know. I heard that on the news there was a hurricane that was close by New Zealand that was going off. And that's why they had a foggy on the morning. Even though it was like, you know, you had the sunlight because it was so much light in Hovik.
But yeah, yeah. Yeah.
When I moved from Hovik to, you know, through the Pakuranga Highway, it was so foggy and I can't even see the whole bridge, right? And I don't know what happened to Auckland weather.
Yeah, that's what we say in this country, you have four seasons in one day. So maybe this is one of those times.
Yeah. I wonder that this year how the wind are going to be.
Yeah,
and the good thing is that government also, because I heard that the government had a new regulations over, you know, all the people who are in beneficiaries or in support, right? They get extra winter fund, right? So they get extra money, as a $20 or something, that about their benefit because of the winter time.
Oh,
and right, because they have a highest host, right? And there is the highest need for them to spend money on during the winter condition. And sometimes winter affect most of the families to undergo having less food on their table, undergo spending money on the right reasons.
And especially if you are new arrival, that would be even worse.
Yeah. And especially because I do see that the quotation of, because we used to receive like $1,200 when we arrived here, right?
Yeah.
And that money is mostly used to buy clothes and all the stuff. And
keeping
everything.
Warm in the house.
Keeping warm in the house. And the secondary question to it is how well that we are able to pay our electric bills if we use heaters and insulation and all the stuff. Because
that's one of the issues. Right?
Yeah, and it's getting colder every year, right? Every year, the winter is increased, increasingly affecting people, and it's getting so cold over the years, right? And it's also getting hotter during summer, and it's also getting colder during winter, right? So no wonder if there is a snow, if you can see a snow.
So now with a global warming, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah.
So it can be a sunny day, in the middle of the sun you have rain, and or you have a foggy weather.
Yeah,
you know, and out of nowhere.
Yeah, so and climate change is very real, and people have to be considerably thinking about how are we affecting the environment, as to be conscious about what we do, right? Because I was reading something about the fashion industry, because they had the Fashion Revolution Week, right? Because of something has happened in Bangladesh that killed textile workers. It was a textile building. They're producing textile for, all biggest companies like H&M and all other biggest companies' products.
Yeah.
They were these people who are in Bangladesh. They are making those textiles for us. Our clothing are made by these people. And they were died because of the building that was collapsed, right? And they started a revolution week to start asking people to be more conscious about what we wear. Because what we wear as a clothes, we affect, you know, the environment. And
so what we're going to do? People will go back to nakedness? So what's going to happen?
Maybe eco-clothing is one of the good ideas. Because as you said, I wonder, you know, how well we would be prepared to find, you know, alternatives, right? This is where we go into looking at recyclable clothing, right? So looking at eco-clothing, it might be a cloth that, you know, biodegradable, right? It might be a cloth that recyclable.
That's right.
Right? Because H&M does, you know, 100% they recycle it, right? In their company, they do recycle fully. So all the clothes that they do produce are recycled cloth, right? So which is vital for next of the business to look at how we can make sure that we are not affecting it, right? Affecting the environment. Because the production causes a lot of effects to the environment, a lot of effect to the people who are making it, right? And they are still getting less money to the people, you know, who really make the cloth. They get paid very less.
So is it like any clothing or a particular type of clothing made of maybe, let's say, silk or cotton or...
Majorly is cotton, because cotton production is like, you know, it's very heavy, and it's most of our clothing are cotton production, right, compared to, you know, polyester other brand of production. But why we are majorly consuming cotton is just because of the condition of the winter, and it's also much suitable during summer as well. So that's why people are more consuming cotton, and then cotton becoming, you know, production-wise, that people wanted to produce a lot of cotton at the smaller area, so they use a lot of fertilizers, at one. And then they also trying to, you know, use other ways to improve the production and also pay the workers very less, right? And the workers are at very low working condition, right? Think about a building that's being collapsed, right? And there was less consideration that was given by the media towards those people. Well, question is that what we are doing about the people who are producing our products, that we are buying it for, you know, fancy 20, 40 and 50 bucks, and sometimes 200 bucks to a cloth, without knowing who made our clothes.
Yeah.
Right? And what happening to them. Right? It's always, even with the shoes and stuff, right? Even we buy Nike, Adidas shoes. But the question is that how much, you know, the people...
How much impact... Does it have on our environment? Yeah.
Right. And
because we don't know, you know, no one knows, and no one is telling us, you know, the impact and what are the alternatives if these are not friendly to our environment? What would we do? Yeah. You know, things like that.
Yeah, and I think that that's where, you know, we stand, you know, as a consumers to be very conscious about what we're trying to do. And I think that one of the, you know, event that I've been to is run by the Conscious Action Group, right? They are a social enterprise that at in Auckland. They run their workshop at Auckland Workplace. You could go online and search for Conscious Action and look at that, how we can learn about what sort of impact that things, you know, around us are doing and how we are contributing as consumers. Because consumers are the one creating the need for value.
That's right.
If we say no, then, you know, producers, they won't produce it.
Yeah, they will not produce if there's no demand.
Yeah, and it's a pretty same story with, you know, the veganism and stuff. Because I read that on a story that there was, you know, many people turning into being vegan, and that started tackling down the meat industry, right? The meats are now just becoming, you know, highly pricey.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, the
people
producers
want to get away from it.
Yeah, right? Think about that. The producers, they sell like 1 million kgs, right, per year. And they started dropping down because consumers are not buying it.
Yeah.
Right? And if they're dropping down, their production is going to be very critical because they can earn more money when a lot of people buy them.
Yeah.
If they can't earn so much money, if less people buying it. If 100 people are buying it, they cannot profit well. Because their profit might be like 10 cents or 20 cents per 1 kg. You know what I mean?
Gosh, so
they earn a lot of money if they sell to 1 million people. They won't earn a lot of money if they sell to 100 people. So that's why the meat prices are increasing, because they wanted to earn more profit. And they started increasing their profit margin. And it's also tackling, because meat lovers, they are on their way and just saying that we does that and does that. But in a way that vegan people also argue that animal production, especially cow in New Zealand, is a major reason for our, you know, production of methane.
Yeah.
Right? All the gases that go into the total, you know, also depletion is the methane. Methane production is... come out of our cow population that we have in New Zealand, right? We have more cows than humans, right? Just being honest. And that's the reason for, you know, us being the biggest contributor, because we're trying to get love for our dairy products and love for meat products. But in one way, the industry have more cows, right? And that occupant to, you know, having more production of methane that's going, you know, totally polluted our air, you know, atmosphere. And also have, you know, the cows, you know, when they put their, you know, their waste being washed out to the river, and also have a high nitrogen in the river, right? So which also goes back into, because I heard that there was one of these guys, he talked about, you know, having, you know, the beetles, remember the beetles that, you know, it's kind of a very specific species. You take the feces from the cow and then it, you know, digest it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a thing that we had in back in my country. And I was always wondering, you know, why people in, you know, agriculture industry is not using it. Because these are natural, you know, beetles who does the job for us. Is take the whole feces and digest it. Right, and is used as a food resource.
Yeah,
right, and digest the components and break them out, so they easily deposit back into the soil.
Yeah, they easily decompose.
Yeah,
that's a lot. Hey, something to do with environment. Yeah, I think we will come back to the environment, and let's have a little break here. I'm playing to you a song which I played before when I start the show, and I will explain to you later why I played that song. It's a song composed by Elton John for Diana when Diana died some time back. So listen and we'll come back. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You are the grace that placed yourselves where lives were torn apart. You called out to our country and you whispered to those in pain. Now you belong to heaven and the stars spell out your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will. Loveliness we've lost, those empty days without your smile. This torch we'll always carry for our nation's golden child. Even though we try, the truth brings us to tears. All our words cannot express the joy you've brought us through the years. And it seems to me you've lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. Your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will. Vines rose, may you ever grow in our hearts. You were the grace that placed yourselves where lives were torn apart. Goodbye, English rose, from a country lost without your soul. Who missed the wings of your compassion more than you will ever know. And it seems to me you've lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before legend ever will.
Welcome back. This is Elton John singing. You know, he was giving a tribute to Princess Diana when she died. It was horrible. You know, the world was caught by surprise because no one would expect that Princess Diana would die in such a way in France. I was in Nairobi, Kenya at the time, and I was really shocked, like the rest of everyone. And it was no one really would understand why it happened the way it happened. But things happen, and the reason why I play this song is because a lot of things has happened from last month and from this week. We had a terrorist attack in Christchurch. That was a month ago. And after that, it was followed by another terrorist attack in Sri Lanka, which we will talk about it later. And then on the 2nd of May, we lost one of the wounded victims of terrorist attack in Christchurch. And this has added to the number that we lost already from 50 now. The number has risen to 51. And yesterday, I got a sad news that I lost two of my best friends. One of them is a lawyer. He's a very good lawyer. And we grew up together. Even the time I left Kenya, he was working as a law firm. And together with one of our other friends. So what happened is they were kidnapped. You know, the war broke out in South Sudan. And then they left. They went to Nairobi, Kenya. And then they were registered as refugees there. And what happened is because of the politics and the government is not, you know, is running after its own people. And then they were chasing these two guys who are fully registered refugees in Kenya. And what happened, the government of South Sudan has spent millions of dollars, kidnapped these guys through the security intelligence officers of Kenya, and then they were taken to South Sudan, and then they were executed. This happened last year, 2017. In January 2017, January 24th and January 23rd, January 24th. So both of them were kidnapped. I didn't know where they were, and no one would know. And 3 days, 2 days ago, the UN came out that they have done the investigation, and then they found out the two guys were executed inside South Sudan. So they submitted a report to the UN Security Council. So these are the evidence. And Amnesty International has really worked very hard to get all these details. And they met the parents on Wednesday. And broke the news to the parents and to the wives and, you know, the children. It was very devastating. And they did not disclose who killed them, but they say they have all the evidence. You know, it's like a well-coordinated plan by the government, including the generals who got involved, even the last man who executed them. So all these details were presented to the UN Security Council. So I lost my good friends. So what is killing me now is not how they are lost, but what about the rest of the refugees who escaped the same way, and now they have the confidence that they are protected by the United Nations, and at the end of the day, you know, they will be no more. They will be gone, and the United Nations or the international community is not doing anything about it. And this is what is killing me.
And there's a question about the political killing, right? So the question that the refugees who flee the war and persecution, right, because that what has happening in their own country. And when they move into, you know, a refugee camp or a center that they feel that they can be protected, and that's when they are being questioned that, you know, how they are being protected, you know, what around them.
Yeah.
So one of the things that has happened in UNHCR back in the time is, I think that I was in Indonesia, right, in a refugee camp. The first thing that, you know, because when we were rescued and our government, they want us back.
Mm.
They say that they want us back because we were publicly spoken out in the media, right, and we were also written by the Indonesia
for
what has been happening back in the country. And the problem is the government, they don't want anything, you know, to be telecasted or anyone to talk about what is happening.
They don't want people to talk about it.
Yeah. Hmm. And why? Because in end of the war, it's been 10 years now, because they have a remembrance on May 18th, right? So they have a remembrance for the genocide that has happened back in Sri Lanka after the civil war that happened for 33 years. And so it has been 10 years, and they have done a procedure call, and when they were debriefing in the United Nations Security Council for the Resolution 3001, and when they were debriefing about it, they talked about, you know, how the last time of the war was happened. And the government, what they did, they had an information team, and they blocked the incoming and outgoing messages and information across the war zone. So not many people are able to communicate.
Yeah.
The people in the own country, they don't know that in their backyard there was a war happening. They have no idea.
Okay.
No media was publishing about the war. There was no one who known about what was happening on the war zone, because they blocked down the whole thing, right? And they had the information team who gather up, and they blocked down whole communication in the area. And they even, because ICRC was communicating, because that's their, you know, regulations, because they had to establish a no-fire zone, and ICRC had to communicate with the other. And what happened is ICRC also say that they were bombed in certain areas, that they were, you know, having their own camps, and they were communicating with people who are outside of the country.
Mm.
They have to communicate with the international people to coordinate the no-fire zone. And that they have to let know, you know, the government and also, you know, the liberation forces that where is the no-fire zone, and they shouldn't fight at the no-fire zone.
Yeah.
And people were bombed in the no-fire zone because of, you know, blocking the whole communication. And they also, you know, barricaded people. That's why we had a missing person cases, because some of the people were arrested and they were taken out under the custody under the Anti-Terrorism Act. And there was people who were even put into, you know, remote isolated camps, right, because they don't want international community communicating with them what has happened in the region, right? And they blocked any international community from communicating with them. Some of the people who fled from them, you know, using the board to outside of Sri Lanka, and they don't want them talking to media, so they don't want them telling them what's happening in the country. This is where my question is, that how I'm going to be protected if the local area is not providing a protection. If you see all the refugee camp and protection centers, they are not being protected by immigration or police. Right? They don't have a police or security forces. Right?
They are just there.
They are just there. It's like an open space. Anyone can walk in, anyone can walk out.
And you can kill as many as you want.
Many as you want, right? A bomb blast on the Sri Lankan community, you know, refugee camps, and they can, you know, affect the entire families who were there.
Yeah.
Because we are concentrated. We were put into one single space. And this can affect the community if their location were known by the other, right?
Yeah.
Trust me, like, government have many ways, and they can spend much of money to find out where these people are, right? And if they want them not being able to speak up to the international community, they will do whatever it takes to stop them from it, right? It's pretty much as, you know, as you said about, you know, lawyer, and they are very well-educated people.
Yeah.
And they might be being involved with, you know, something has happened back in the country, and they don't want them speaking about it.
He was so outspoken man, and he would not stop talking about the bad things the government was doing at the time. And also, you know, before he died, before he was kidnapped, I called him, because he was my good friend, and we always talk, and we always chat, and we talked, and we said, you know, somebody tipped me off that you can advise your friend, you know, things are happening in a very bad way, and he would regret, so advise him to leave. And then I called him. I said, "Man, this is the news I got, and if you can listen to me, you can leave Kenya and then go to Ethiopia for yourself, to leave the family there. Nothing would happen to them." And he said, "You know what? I got this news before you. I was told. Somebody credible told me. A reliable source told me. But I will not do it. You know, I'm an innocent man. I have not done anything wrong. And if I die, I will die as an innocent man. I'm not going anywhere. Let them kill me."
And
then a day later, he's gone.
And I think that this is where we should be accountable as the people who know, you know, what has happened to him as a person. Even I will really say it's a responsibility of the United Nations, and it's also a responsibility of all independent human rights commissions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They should take accountable measures to people who have done to them, because I will really see every influential political people who, you know, if their voice were suppressed, that means, you know, millions of people's voice being suppressed.
Yeah.
If one person who is very powerful, who is very outspoken, is being killed, right, and who are even escaping the war, who was fleeing the country and was speaking about what has happened, and he is being killed, then everyone who wanted to speak out,
they will be done with the same way.
Yeah, and they will fear that's going to happen to them, and they won't speak out of what has been happening
because
in the country.
Because they have seen the consequences.
And that's going to affect the community who are living in South Sudan, who can't escape.
Yeah.
Right? There is families who are there on the ground. They might not be able to get out of the country.
Yeah.
They might not have enough money, because IDAS, you know, paid a lot of money to traffickers to get out of the country.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't simply very less money. Right? And they have a lot of risk, but we paid, you know, lumps of money to get out. Some people, they don't have that money. Right? We do see, you know, the migration over Mediterranean Sea, and they accounted there was like 300 to 800 people were in a very small tube-like boat, and they accounted the journey, because I think it was done by BBC when they documented the, you know, the migration from Libya to Mediterranean Sea.
Oh, yeah. And I saw that documentation.
And they looked at how well, you know, refugees are being treated by traffickers. It's the worst than ever.
Because this is a slavery in our modern time. It should not happen in the way it happened, you know.
Yeah, and it's also a lot of things that we went through when, you know, the human trafficking is happening.
Yeah.
Is, you know, women are more likely to get raped, by number one. And men can be, you know, pushed into. They might be killed for money. They can ransom for more money. Right? And it has happened in Thailand as well, because they talked about, you know, the Thailand forest, you know, some of the Burmese the Rohingyans who escaped, you know, the conflict in Burma, they went through the Thailand, you know, forest. They used the human traffickers who were transporting them to the Thailand forest. And when they done the investigation in the Thailand forest area, and they found excavations of the bodies that was buried, who were killed by human traffickers because they didn't pay the money.
We have a Beyond Refuge, one of the a story book consisting of, I think, 13 stories in there, but the second one is coming out. It will have 20 stories, and one of the stories, which is there, is about this man who was who ran away from human traffickers, and he's a Burmese, and he went through too much. It was like, you will see it in the history. It's very horrifying. It was like, you know, when you get sick in the boat, because they use them as they have to fish for them, you know, in the fishing boats. And so you are there in the ocean, you know. If you become sick, because you go there without vaccination, so you have the seasickness. So what they do, they will throw you into the river.
And the worst thing is, because I heard that one of the Rohingyan boat, what they did, the Thailand, you know, government forces, when they caught them up, they literally removed the engine, right? And then they said, "It's up to you. You go on the, you know, on the sea. If you die, you die, right? Let the sea decide what happened to the people." They removed the engine, so they don't have a propulsion, right?
Yeah.
They don't have any push for their boat anymore. But just because they got caught by the Thailand, you know, officials, and they done that. And, you know, they finally were rescued by Malaysians. So this has happened in, you know, for refugees there, you know, we went through a lot, you know, undergoing human trafficking.
Yeah.
We went through heaps of them.
Yeah.
You know, most difficulties. And when we go and, you know, settle ourselves in a refugee camp or, you know, sitting somewhere, we feel that we are protected. And
yeah, and the protection actually is not there.
It's not there.
Yeah.
And it's pretty same story with, you know, what has happened in Christchurch as well, because some of them who were died in there were refugees, right? They were resettled to the country.
Yeah.
And the sad story from us is, you know, whenever I was there, because I was there, you know, I was working with the families and the victims who were affected by it. And I was suffering to understand what my purpose would be if I feel I'm protected, right? If I feel I'm safe here, and then my safety and my protection is not being assured. I'm still being vulnerable because anyone could just come in and just, you know, attack me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone could come in and find me where I am. And I'm more vulnerable if I'm a, you know, if I'm more reasonable political asylum.
Yeah.
Right? Because all the people who seek for political asylum have the highest vulnerability because they are much more targeted by the government. And the government don't want them speaking up about it.
That's right.
If they're even speaking up to the international community,
it's still they will fall into the same trap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
That's why that they do things to shut down people. Right, they are trying to force people not to speak about it. But only thing that I would say, as from Sri Lankan community, even if it is 10 years that has happened, we still not letting the stories of, you know, the end of the war not being informed to the people. Right, I think that they had a protest that was happened, you know, a few weeks earlier that they talked about, you know, how well the people were talking about, you know, we only had 400 people who have died. But what about the people, more than 100,000 people who have passed away during the war? No one had any knowledge about it. No one had a talk about it. No one even thought about them. So in a question that is asking that, yeah, human lives are not comparable. 400 lives is same as 100,000 lives.
That's right.
But the question is that, are we giving the same amount of, you know, same amount of, you know, effort or same amount of broadcasting time to the group who have died, who have lost 100,000 people and who are from ethnic minority in their own country. And it's also talked about the ethnic conflict, right? And it's all started from the religious conflict that has been 2 years before.
Yeah.
Which was started from the Buddhist monks started imposing that the country is their own. They don't want, you know, the country to be of the Muslims. And that started, you know, firing up the inter-religious conflict. And that's where everything was sparked up. And everything had that effect of how we can build the community together rather than splitting them off. Because government, they partially shown their, you know, effort towards solving that inter-ethnic conflict. If they could have done some measures to say how we can build race relations rather than, you know, building the hatred. You know what I mean? You know, do not build the division between the communities. Build them up to teach them up how to live together rather than teach them up how to hate each other.
Yeah.
You know? And it will take away the effort of feeling united. Because I wouldn't be feel united if I was in a country that I felt I am being, you know, divided from my whole community because of the things happening around, right? And in a way, New Zealand dealt with it very good. We had, you know, very good response and the community is well supported. And we had the community coming together and, you know, hold on to each other and we mourn for each other, right? And
yeah, because that's what we need in a community. A community should not be defined by where you come from, by your geographical background. It should be defined by who you are as a person. So that's the community we are looking for, and that's the community of Auckland, all we know, and that's the community of New Zealand. And I think we are lucky to have a very good Prime Minister who is, I think, to me, has done a very good job, you know, in handling the situation when it happened in Christchurch. And I think she did very well, and I think the all New Zealanders, not only her, all New Zealanders have done what they should have done.
And you know, as to be honest, that it's the amount of support that we received in Christchurch, you know, it was so good, and it made me feel that I belong to the country and I belong to be included in this country, and this country accept me for who I am without no difference. That's how I really want, you know, the people around the world to feel like, right? And no one should not be, you know, targeted just because of their belief, just because of their race, because of their color, because of what they hold, right? And everyone should be respected as humans. Right? We are all humans before race, before religion, before everything. That's what all what matters is looking at being human, how much we can be human. That's all what matters.
Let's have a break, and we will come back. This is Alpha Blondie from Ivory Coast.
Oh,
Yes, we are back, and you are listening to 104.6, and this is a Planet FM, and it's a Resettled Radio. And this is Joby, and we are with Gaulak, and we were discussing about...
Yep. We have been talking about a lot of things from Christchurch and Sri Lanka and loss of a friend and, you know, what we can do as a nation. A lot of things. So now, Joby, if for those who do not know, when the Christchurch attack happened, Joby went down to Christchurch with some team members and to help the victims and the families of the victims. You know, it could be something small, maybe for a run, you know, get something from the shop that a family could hit. And because some of those people who have gone, you know, they're breadwinners of the families. And the family is just there, you know, wife with kids. Where else would you send somebody to find food for the kids to eat? So you are grieving. So this is the role Joby and others win and fulfill. My question, Joby, is when you got there, because you saw it on the news, what was your reaction when you got to I know there are a lot of people there who went to help too, but in your own experience, you know, what was the first reaction when you got there?
I think that I was mourning for more than a day, that I was struggling to talk about what has happened because it affected me, because most of our resettled communities came from the persecution stories and PTSDs and traumas back in the time. And it sparked up myself questioning that whether my life is at stake here or whether I'm being protected or whether I'm being included in this community. Mm. That I was questioning myself, and then I got a chance to just pop in the flights within 2 to 3 hours that, mm. you know, I had to book the flights and get on the flights and was there on the evening, and we were, you know, started working, you know, as soon as we arrived. And the shock was that amount of people who were turned to the community center because the whole hospital was under lockdown. So there was no one who can access to the hospitals. And there was, you know, heavy, hectic people who trying to understand what really happened to their, you know, loved ones.
Yeah.
Right? Some of the families, they are in desperate need to know, because there was 200 to 400 people who were involved in those two mosques.
And they were at the prayers. And the whole list of the victims were not released at
the time. Not released at the time. And police was not confirming, because they took, like, more than 4 days to
because
release.
It's a long process.
It's a long
process identifying
somebody, and, you know, finding who they are and, you know, finding what their names and informations is pretty critical at the time. Mm. And it's also heavy loss as well, because there is very less forces in Christchurch that, you know, that they needed more people and more people to be working to solve the problem that are happening on the ground.
Mm.
And most of the families and community members, they trying to understand what happened to their loved one, because some of them, they were there, right, in mosque, and some of them have no idea what they happened, whether they were injured or whether they were deceased, right?
Mm.
And they were turning up at the center, and when we arrived, we were immediately need to look at how information is being transferred and how well people are communicating, because the problem is sometimes information is also a problem. Just because someone says something that is not true, that might affect the community members from, you know, knowing whether it is true or whether it is not true, and also getting the right support that they needed or right information that they needed. So they also established, a volunteer service at the, at the site, and also have a missing person information filing. That's also done with the New Zealand police, right? They started filing missing person complaint for each of the family members and community members. And then they were looking at how well we can help and support the community during at the time, because some of them can't even cook. Some of them were mourning. Some of them were, you know, in a desperate need to find out what really happening, you know, to their family members. They were waiting for a longer time. They were at the center for, like, you know, whole night and stuff. And they needed food, and some of them were cooking food for them. So all of us are looking at one section, and one of the major thing that me and Ashley did, and we were the operation manager, you know, Ashley was the operation manager, and I was looking at the community engagement and, you know, how media information could be transferred, and we gathered out and made like information sheet as well. So we made sure that the community members receive an information sheet that does have information about who they have to go to if they have a visa problems, and who they have to communicate with if they need some money as an urgent call, and who they have to communicate if they need any support that's, you know, psychological or medical support that they needed. Even they wanted to purchase something, you know, as a tablet of pills that they wanted to get. So we gather up the information, put it in one sheet, and establish a call line as well. So we made a family, victim families call line. And they can ring us up and ask them that they needed help, extra help with, you know, filling up that forms and stuff. And then, you know, Ashley looked at how we can transport, you know, the donated products, right? Looked at how we can ensure that families are getting the right support. Some of the families can't come to the community center because, you know, they are really affected and they didn't have time to come to the community center, and they are really struggling in the middle because, you know, they don't have the time for themselves.
But in a confession wise, was there a lot of confusion because there's a lot of help down there? And did you guys know one another as a volunteers from different parts of the country? Because I, even one guy called me. He said, "I need to involve. I have a daycare down here in Christchurch, but I don't know how to get there. I don't know who to contact. I don't know how to give that help. But if there's a way, can I get involved with the daycare I have?" So those families can bring their kids to the daycare here free of charge. And then I connected that guy with Ashley. So I thought there's a confusion down there because a lot of people, a lot of help there, and you never knew one another before.
Yeah, and we work through social media. Right, we use social media for the good reason. Right, we use it for to form the connection that we wanted.
Okay,
right, and a lot of people are offering help, so we does needed to establish like a volunteer database to know that what they are offering and where they are at and how they can offer the help that they want to offer. Because some people, they don't, you know, they might not be able to, you know, donate the products, right? But some people, they can donate the service and support, right? They can say, I can take one of the families for, you know, for a ride. You know, I can take them to a hospital or take them to there. Because if you do see the whole statistic that, because, you know, we were measuring what sort of needs over there, and we found out that there was a lot of men who were died, right, compared to, you know,
to the woman.
To the woman. Because, you know, it's aligned with the story as well, because the shooter doesn't know where the women were in the mosque. So most of them, you know, killed were men. And men play a biggest role in our communities, right? And in our community, they know how to drive and they widely work and they are the main source to pay rent and all this happening just because
breadwinners of the families.
And it's a social structure that we live
in.
Right? And it's a structure that most of the New Zealanders doesn't know about. And that's the problem because our communities were very much less studied, right? And wasn't academically studied how our social structures were. And when, you know, there was a man who was removed from the family, that woman started suffering because they don't know how to drive at one, and they are really struggling to figure out how they're going to pay the rent, right? Okay. Out of all the problems that are happening to them, they are trying to, you know, figure it out how they could, you know, overcome these problems that they are facing in their real life. And this is where, you know, I see the vital impact of it is when we work through connecting, because as you say, someone offering a daycare, we literally connected the people who are offering daycare to the people who need it.
Who need that, right? We need that service.
Yeah, we need the service. And there was people who had like, were, you know, children in their families that, you know, even with their extended family, they needed someone to care for them. And, you know, we literally used the service and connected them and literally offered the families what they really need. But the question is that most people who were focusing on the community center, because a lot of people who are turning up to help or providing food to the community center, but people forget about the victim families who couldn't access the community centers. And no one have the data because police doesn't know who they are, right? And they are trying to gather up who they are and what their families and what they need and stuff.
Yeah.
So no one had that. And victim support taking a longer time to, you know, understand, you know, who they are and started visiting them. And there was heaps of families who were traumatized, who were injured, and, you know, who were even have families who were from deceased. And they're already getting extended families coming in. They're getting everyone gathering up. But the problem is that, you know, they are struggling as well to, you know, balance between mourning versus taking care of their own lives and taking care of the other people who are coming there. And this is where, you know, we started gathering information. We started, you know, communicating with people and understanding who is really impacted. And looking at, you know, we visited them, we made like a form and go and analyze what they really need. Whether they need foods or whether they need non-perishable products that they can cook by themselves, or they need like a ready-made food. Whether they needed halal meat,
yeah.
Right? Because,
yeah.
You know, most of them offering a lot of food, but there was less meat in it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and Muslim families, you know, we mostly diet on, you know, halal meat.
Yeah.
And, it's the way the culture represents halal,
yeah.
Right? And we collected halal meat and we also delivered to the families and we also cooked for families. And, you know, we also provided the sanitary items as well, because there was someone who was in the hospitals. They did not have time even to go to a shop to buy, like, you know, their sanitary items or their needs and, you know, the women products and everything. And it was vital for us to work on the ground and look at how things works around. And the good thing is we didn't have any plan. Just being honest, like, the whole team is like gather of volunteers and people who really wanted to help. And
that's the confusion I meant. Because the whole bunch of people out there trying to help, I think the mission was that let's go there, let's get down there, let's go and help. But no one knows who and who is who and who and who is giving what service.
That's why it was very vital for us to establish all the, you know, the base
and the network
and that's why we do see that the holding of information was one of the good things that we did, and also directly communicate with the victim families. It helped us to really understand, you know, where they are at,
you know, how
we could be able to offer them, how we can make things way better.
Mm.
It helped us having independent consultation. And we also thought that it's also a long-term process,
yeah.
Right? Because resettled communities is vastly affected, and you know, Muslim communities are affected in Christchurch. And it shouldn't be just like 6 weeks or 4 weeks, you know, work. It should be a long-term work to rehabilitate and reconciliate their life back into, you know, their normal life that they can live into. Because some of them, they are really, really traumatized.
Yeah, it is. And this trauma will take a long time to go away. And we hope that it will not happen again in New Zealand.
And we love the faith of the country.
Yeah.
And a lot of people write Kia Kaha. It just stays strong, you know. And
you know, the visits, the flowers, the hugging, the, you know, the kisses, the tears. That's a lot. Yeah.
That's something that we respect to the country, just because the way New Zealand responded, it shows that the world can be a very better place if we have better leaders.
Yeah.
If we show the world that we can be better. We don't need to react in a very negative way to things. We can react very positive way and remove the negativity around it.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And we don't want one thing making the whole community to split up. One thing making the whole community to hate each other. We want one thing that uniting the community.
And then the united will be always. As a nation, we were united and we will stay united. I think it has brought us to the end of our program for this week. We will come back again on Saturday next week. And please tune in again Saturday next week. We will be back with more.
Yes.
From here.
And from Joby and from Gaulik.
Have a good week.
Yeah, and see you guys next week.
See you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.
We leave you with Bob Marley. Everything going to be all right.